Lieutenant General Ricardo Sanchez served as commander of coalition forces in Iraq from June 2003 to June 2004. He shared power during that time with Paul Bremer, the administrator of the Coalition Provisional Authority. General Sanchez led the coalition forces at the height of the war. He was there for the capture of Saddam Hussein and the revelations of torture at Abu Ghraib. General Sanchez was also commander of coalition forces on April 6, 2004, during the Battle of Ramadi and the Battle of Fallujah, both seminal battles in the war. Steve Paulson sat down with General Sanchez for a candid discussion about the war in Iraq, which he describes in his memoir, Wiser in Battle.
At the beginning of your book, you're very blunt in your criticisms of how we got into the war. You say, quote, "I watched helplessly as the Bush administration led America into a strategic blunder of historic proportions." What were the biggest blunders?
Well, I think the biggest blunder that we made was that we truly believed and embraced the immediate history of the country. In the previous 15 to 20 years, we had been able to launch military expeditions to accomplish national security and national military objectives without the commitment of significant national power. We did it in a whole litany of places. We did it in Panama, we did it in Haiti, in Bosnia, in Kosovo, in Somalia. And we really expected that we could go into Iraq and accomplish our objectives in a similar fashion, even though history and the assessments that had been made back during Desert Shield and Desert Storm told us differently. And yet, we went ahead and committed the country, and then we made some decisions in the very early stages. By the 1st of May of 2003, we had already decided that we were leaving that country without having reestablished a political system and a government that could control it, and we had clear knowledge that the entire security structure of the nation had completely dissolved. And we never recognized that through the May 2003 timeframe.
These are huge blunders that you're talking about. I mean, you're saying we went into this war without adequate military personnel, and then we didn't really have a strategy in place, a viable plan to control the country once we had removed Saddam Hussein.
Oh, absolutely. I think we really believed the Iraqi expatriates that were talking to us and telling us that we would be embraced as liberators. We really believed that we could go in there as we had done in all of those previous conflicts and just walk out after a matter of 2 or 3 months and reduce our troop levels down to an almost nuisance level, if you will, of down to 30,000, which was the order that had been issued by the 1st of May of 2003, that by the end of August of 2003, we would draw down the force, which at that time was at about 180,000, and just be in a caretaker mode.
In your book, you pretty much blame the neoconservatives for these blunders. You suggest that they were blinded by ideology and they weren't listening to the military who were there in place, who actually knew what was going on. Can you elaborate on this?
Sure. What was continually happening was, we were providing on-the-ground assessments and on-the-ground reporting really on a daily basis about what was happening on the ground, and yet the administration and even our military leaders back in Washington after the 1 May declaration by the president that the conflict was over, they turned their priorities away from the war and to, in the military, as we call it, resetting the force for the next contingency. We identified the fact that there was an insurgency going on by the middle of June of 2003, and the first time that General Abizaid used the words insurgency in the middle of July, he was very quickly repudiated by the Secretary of Defense. We also identified the fact that we were going to have to be there in significant numbers for a period of time, at least 3 to 5 years, because of the lack of a military. When the debathification and disbanding of the Army decisions were imposed in May of 2003, that completely changed the strategy from one of quick withdrawal to one where we were going to have an extended presence for at least 5 years, as we saw it at the time. Those were clearly communicated back to Washington, and they were ignored.
So when you were commander of coalition forces in Iraq, were you serving under Paul Bremer?
No, the command relationships were probably one of the most convoluted relationships that we could have come up with. The ambassador and I were essentially at an equal level in terms of the authorities that we had in the country. I was in direct support of him. We knew within the military that success depended on the support that we provided to the ambassador. So we were clearly responsive to all of his needs. But if a problem came up or if a disagreement came up, then it would go to General Abizaid at Central Command, who would then talk to the ambassador and try to come up with a consensus approach. And if not, then final resolution rested with the Secretary of Defense.
So did you butt heads with Paul
Bremer? Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. There were multiple times. Probably the first significant issue that had to go to the level of the Secretary of Defense was in the area of building security capacity, both police and military. We very quickly, in the summer of 2003, realized that that mission was not going well and that the ambassador and his organization didn't have the ability to execute that properly, and we went to the Secretary to try to get that mission assigned to my command.
Secretary Rumsfeld.
And, Secretary Rumsfeld. And Secretary Rumsfeld failed to make a decision until the spring of 2004. That is just one example. And then there were a couple of other very significant disagreements that we had in the spring of 2004 when we were fighting Muqtada al-Sadr and Fallujah.
Can you just briefly elaborate on what those disagreements were?
Sure. Sure. In Fallujah, there were political decisions made that we had to go into Fallujah after the killing of the Blackwater personnel, and that we had to go in there very, very rapidly. The military recommendation was that we delay because the Marines were not properly set in Fallujah. But the political decision made by the president was that we were going to respond very aggressively and immediately. And therefore, we launched, and almost within hours after the commencement of the offensive into Fallujah, the Iraqi government began to fall apart, and the United Nations effort threatened to leave the country. And it resulted in an order being given to the military to stop the offensive and to immediately withdraw from Fallujah. And I refused to issue that order to my soldiers because we believed at that point in time that we were only about 4 to 5 days away from completing the mission, and probably more importantly, that if we were seen to be withdrawing under fire, because we were in contact across the entire front inside of Fallujah with the insurgents, if we were seen to be withdrawing under fire, it would be a catastrophic defeat for America. And eventually, you know, as a result of the Fallujah decision, you know, I threatened to resign instead of issuing that order. And the compromise that we came to was that we would just stop the offensive and not withdraw. That's how we were able to reconcile that major disagreement.
Let me ask a very basic question. President Obama plans to end the combat mission in Iraq by the end of August 2010. How should we look back on this war? Did we win it or did we lose it?
Well, I think, you know, history will judge this war in a couple of different ways. One, it will judge it as some significant strategic mistakes that were made by our country and the coalition in the initial stages, followed by some neglect on the part of both political and military commanders in terms of what was required on the ground, a lack of national commitment to apply all of our national power in order to be able to achieve success. Once we all established and the fact that a war was going on that had to be fought, we continued to focus on the application of military power, even though we knew that there was no military solution to the problem.
One thing that I guess I am trying to figure out as I, you know, as a civilian, as a journalist, looking at what you're describing and all the stories that we've heard about the blunders early in the war, I mean, both how it was prosecuted in those first years, but also even before that, some of the basic decisions about how to proceed with this war, I guess I wonder if the top military people spoke out. I mean, there were these decisions that were made that in retrospect seemed to be clearly wrong. You were saying it was clear that they were wrong at the time, I mean, sort of following this neoconservative ideology. And I'm wondering if, did you speak out and criticize some of these decisions? Did some of your colleagues, you know, generals speak out? Was there opposition?
This raises an issue that is really at the core of the military ethic and the oath of office that a military officer and really a soldier takes when he puts on the uniform. He swears to support and defend the Constitution, and the officers swear to obey the orders of the President of the United States. And within that construct, that is what provides America this tremendous foundation for civilian control of the military. And in the execution of missions, when a mission is assigned to you as a military commander, you have two choices. You obey the orders or you resign. And at times, like in Fallujah and with Muqtada al-Sadr, our judgments were different than the political judgments, and the politicians made the decision, and we obeyed. I don't think we, as Americans, want to open ourselves to the possibility of having currently serving military commanders in the field openly disagreeing and arguing against political decisions that are made. That will begin to undermine the core of our democracy and will go the way of the banana republics. And we should not allow that.
Lieutenant General Ricardo Sanchez served as commander of coalition forces in Iraq from June 2003 to June 2004. His memoir is called Wiser in Battle, A Soldier's Story. He spoke with Steve Paulson.